Okay. And you'll say.
Welcome. Oh, sorry. You're gonna say it? Okay. One, two, three. Welcome to the In-Hope Podcast, where we address different topics to help strengthen unity in the body of Christ. Yeah?
I'm gonna do it.
You're gonna say unity?
Yeah.
Say it. Say unity.
Unity!
Yay! Welcome to the In Hope Podcast, where each Monday we drop a new episode talking about how we can strengthen the unity of the body of Christ. Hey, I'm so excited to share this conversation I had with Bill and Hannah at the Biblical Study Center in Boise, right there at BSU. They were such gracious hosts, and I should say that me and Avery were there, and they were very accommodating, very understanding at times when I'd even have to get up and help Avery with stuff. They did not skip a beat. Thank you guys so much. Thank you so much for this conversation. Biblical Study Center is a great ministry to get connected with, and you guys will learn some about it in this podcast. Also, just there's lots of great nuggets from their own personal stories that we can really take and apply in our lives and in ministry and in organization elsewhere. So hopefully you guys enjoy this conversation we had at the Biblical Study Center with Bill and Hannah. And we can just kind of talk, and sure. This will show me. I mean, it tends to pick up pretty well. Okay. So you can see I'm not very close to it. Yeah. It's still picking up, and I can always turn the gain up a bit. So
cool.
You can tell me. Quiet down, Bill.
Oh no, not at all.
Speak up.
Yeah.
Sit up and speak up.
No, yeah, but it
where
does
are you
well.
From, by the way?
So I grew up in Southern California.
What, like, where?
And then it was Rancho Cucamonga area.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
So are you familiar with it?
Okay. Kind of. I just know my wife is from Woodland Hills, Canoga Park, up in the San Fernando Valley.
Okay, okay.
She used to be able to skip school and go down to Malibu Beach.
Oh, like, yeah.
Well, I would have done that. I didn't have anything to skip for in Eugene. It's like, hey, want to go down to Willamette River? No. So... Yeah, so you've been down there, and would you?
Yeah, I was out there up until I was old enough to leave. So when I graduated at 17, high school at 17, moved out to Texas.
Oh, okay.
And then I was in Texas for about 4 years. Yeah, so it would have been 07 to 11. So okay. I was in Texas for 4 years.
What were you doing? Did you do school or what?
I did a little schooling down there. Okay. Got a fitness certification. Did some boot camps, personal training.
Okay.
And then ended up joining the Air Force.
Oh wow!
So I enlisted in the Air Force out of Texas.
Okay.
And then ended up going up to Alaska.
Wow.
And spent 3 years in Alaska.
Wow.
It's like polar opposite.
Right? No, and it really was. So
Texas to Alaska.
I left in March. And so it was March in Texas, already felt like, you know, it was getting up there into 80s, 90s, whatnot. It was nice, nice weather.
Mm-hmm.
And then go up, fly into Texas or to Alaska, and I land and it's just blankets of snow, just
Alaska.
Completely covered in snow. I land at night. So, and I mean, I don't know exactly what time it was, but it was nighttime. So I land
after 2 p.m.
Yeah, possibly. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I don't because I'm not sure what the sunset time was at that point. But I landed. It was nighttime. Guy picks me up from the base, and on the way out to the base, like, everything's just dark, covered in snow. You can see the snow glistening like it's fresh snowfall. And then there's a Northern Lights just overhead. And I'm like, man, this is awesome. I was so excited.
New
when I landed. Yeah. When I landed out there and I saw all the snow, I was so excited. Mm. And,
after being in Texas for 4 years,
yeah.
Probably.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No,
what part
yeah.
of Texas?
So I was always in the DFW area. So okay. I was in Waxahachie, Louisville, Frisco, just kind of moving around
okay.
that area.
Okay.
So very cool. Yeah.
There's a player here from Flower Mound,
yeah.
Texas.
Yeah, Flower Mound is just below Louisville.
Okay.
So it's
okay.
it's Meridian Cuna. I mean, it's
oh,
they're
wow.
close.
Got it.
It's
oh,
close. I mean, so is Cuna.
I get
but,
it.
You know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, cool. That's and then awesome. How'd you end up here?
Air Force. So
oh, okay.
after
are you
I was
out,
stationed
are you still
Alaska.
In
yep
Okay. No, I'm out. I stepped out in 2017.
Okay.
So I was in Alaska and then ended up moving down here to Mountain Home. And that's where me and my wife finally got stationed at the same base.
Nice.
Yeah. And then we ended up falling in love out here.
Wow.
What's wrong, Mama?
Uh-oh.
Something in her eye?
You okay?
Uh-huh. Thank you. Are you okay?
What's your daughter's name?
This is Avery.
Oh, Avery. I love it. What a pretty name. And how old is Avery?
Avery is four.
Four?
And I think she's tired.
Oh, I understand. I do the same thing when I'm tired. Just ask Hannah. The other day, Hannah wouldn't look at the picture I drew, and she just...
Yeah, melted.
I fell apart.
Yeah. Food's always good, huh?
Love always the answer. The
backpack. Yeah, food is good.
So, I mean, how did you guys end up here? You're from Eugene.
Yeah, my wife and I, well, I went to Eugene, went to Civic Lutheran in Tacoma to play football up there and was plugged into ministry in different ways when I was up there, and then stayed there and kind of got a, I don't call it a career job, but a degree job for a while.
Okay.
And really sensed that God was calling me into ministry. And it was one of those moments that I really believe it's kind of a phrase that came into my mind one time when I was driving my really cool Chevy Celebrity station wagon around the 405. Caught in traffic, but it was
nice.
I'd taken the LSAT and was planning on going to law school.
Mm-hmm.
And I heard this phrase, or just something came one day that said, study God's law, not man's law.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew that meant going to seminary because I've been kind of dragging my feet on it because it just, I don't know. Law school seemed like a legit, really cool grad degree.
Uh-huh.
And seminary sounded like Candyland. Was it real? And it's like, ironically, it was tough. It was not easy. But so I went back to Eugene and got a job selling computers. And I moved back in with my folks to save up to go. And in the meantime, I met Lori, who had just lost her husband to cancer, and she had three kids.
Oh, wow.
And we kind of got to know each other. I went away to seminary after a couple of years, and then we came back and got engaged, and then went away another year, and then came back and got married. And brought them all with me out to Chicago to finish up the last year. And then we went back to Oregon.
Mm-hmm.
And over the next 8 years, we had two kids of our own together, and then I got called and asked to come here and start up an athletic ministry at Boise State in 2003.
Yeah.
So we moved out here in summer of 04, and that was 20 years ago.
Wow.
And that was a hard one because things were just starting to click in certain ways there.
Yep.
And I was like, oh man, we're in such a great spot. And why would you, and we had built a house.
Uh-huh.
Like, why would you call us away right when everything was just getting good? Kind of. And ironically, we're there again, 20 years in, and we're like, everything's just clicked. Well, I mean, you met Hannah.
Yeah.
She's a big part of it here. It's like, oh my goodness. You know, you finally assemble your dream team with your star players. We got all the pieces for a championship.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like, yeah, here goes the place also. So we're heading back to Oregon, and I'm going to be going back to athletic ministry.
Okay.
Athletes in Action at University of Oregon.
Okay.
But in the meantime, we've been here doing this, and I love this ministry. I love what it is. I love what it's become.
Mm-hmm.
I love what it can continue to become.
Yeah.
And there's just a lot of neat stuff going on. I'm seeing God's Spirit move.
Yeah.
Lives are being changed. People are being reached.
That's awesome.
You know, in the way that the culture is right now,
yeah,
with the anger and the vehemence and vitriol, it's the people are hungering for genuine peace and hope beyond just what the memes are telling them.
Exactly. You know? So, absolutely.
We're in a pretty cool spot here. So I'm sad to leave, but I actually believe I'm leaving it in a good spot.
Yeah. Well, and that's a great place, right?
Yeah.
That's where you want to leave things. You want
absolutely
to leave them better than you found them. You want to leave them where you feel like they're healthy, they're going to be thriving, they're going to be growing.
Yeah.
So
I told someone, if I'd left about 3 or 4 years ago, I think it would have been more of a, you know, toss someone the keys and say, well, I did what I could.
Uh-huh.
It's your problem. You know? And I really do have that sense of confirmation.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't want to put words into the Lord's mouth, but I have a sense of, you know, Bill, for this chapter in your life, well done, good and faithful servant.
That's awesome.
Which, and I'm, again, I qualify everything I say because Hannah knows. I'm like,
no, Bill has built an incredible community here. I know you and I were talking about that before. Just that idea of unity among believers and different ministries coming together and working together, knowing that we all have the same goal. And Bill has just really created that here at the BSC with all these different ministries. Every month, the CMA like group meets here and talk about prayer requests, updates, and everyone's praying for each other and encouraging and supporting each other. And that's Bill has so built that. Bill is the reason that that is here is because of Bill. And so he's left quite.
Kinda.
Yes, you're the reason. And even like we had his going away party on Saturday, which was like super sad and everything. Oh, but all these people like had a chance to like share. A lot of them did, and it was just so amazing just to hear all the ways that Bill has impacted this this campus, you know, the city, and then here at the BSC.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just like wow. I mean, so we're gonna miss him dearly. But
that's so cool.
But we know that God's calling him to something else and a new adventure, and he can make that impact now it's in Oregon. So but
it's either I'm ready to leave or Hannah's ready for me to leave.
We're gonna miss him so much because like, and we talked about this, like you can't replace Bill. Bill's not replaceable, you know, like no one can be Bill. Nobody can be we talk about like Bill talked about this, but like the vibe of the of the center here, you know, and Bill has created that, just that welcoming atmosphere. People walk in and he's taking the time to get to know them and hear their stories, hear where they're at, encourage them in the Lord, minister to them. That is something that you cannot put, you can't quantify that. It's just something that's so valuable. And I felt that the minute I walked in the door for the first time here at the BSC. Yeah. I didn't know anybody, didn't know what this was. I just, just some rando young adult coming in and wanted to take a class here. And met Bill and Tina at the time was the previous administrative, one of them, administrative assistants. And, and Jonathan here, he was an intern. Just all of them just were so warm and that's so friendly. And Bill especially took the time to get to know me. We have this our student lunch every Thursday, and he would just take the time. Like I'd be sitting by myself at a table, and Bill would like come up to me and like have lunch with me. And it really was so intentional. And just hearing my story, I don't know, it just meant so much. And that's, I see him doing that, you know, all the time. And that's why everyone here is gonna miss Bill because he is that, you know. And and he deeply, just genuinely cares for people and is excited to see them. And you just, so no one's going to be that. So now as Bill's leaving, I'm like, I hope I can, you know, kind of try to carry on that legacy. I don't know, you know, even today. Anyway.
No, crazy, and that's
crazy
that,
day today.
That is so complimentary. Thank you.
It's true. I mean,
I wish I could put that in a little bottle and, you know, just to give myself a little spritz of that when I need it down the road.
It's totally true.
Because it's really easy to feel like, what have I done?
And
here's where it's interesting. I've really been walking this. What's me and what's the Lord? And finding that right part where I can, that place where I can accept that God, it is God, it has worked in and through me, and it is also me, and I can feel good about that. So I don't want to defer all of it and just say, oh, you know, I'm nothing. But I also don't want to say, yes, it's all me.
And exactly.
You can buy my instructional videos.
But take the credit where it's due, you know?
Well,
he's been faithful and obedient to what God has called him, and that's very obvious, and what this place has become.
That's cool.
You know, and Bill has been the spearhead of that, and so, we only hope that we can.
Your dog slay?
Yeah. Of course I can draw your dog slay. No,
That's what dads are for. So anyway, I don't know where we're going with that, but
I think
I'll have to say Bill's awesome and we're going to miss him very much. That's the bottom line of what I was trying to say.
I think that'll, if I can maybe make that my ring.
Yes, exactly, right? Just put it on repeat with a little beat behind it.
Bill's irreplaceable. Well, I think there, I was just talking with a former student today. Yeah. We had lunch together just to say goodbye and that. And I was wanting to mention something because I just see God's hand in his life and the growth that he's, the steps he's taken, and wanting to encourage him. But I think there's a recognizing that this is all the work of God, the work of Christ in and through someone. Yeah. But it's also me keeping in step with the Spirit.
Yes.
So if I'm doing those things, God will work in that person's life. But it, and it's not me pulling a lever. You know, it's me doing, being obedient to the Spirit. So, and it's, I don't know why it takes so long to figure out this basic stuff. You know what I mean? It's like,
I think a lot of it is... With most things in Christianity, I feel like there's a difference between where we know in our head and then when you get that experience and walking it out. I tell people all the time, I feel like Christianity in general is the simplest, most difficult thing you'll ever experience.
Yeah.
It's simple because we can clearly articulate and say, you know, the fundamentals of it and what it means, and you know, it's living by faith, it's placing our trust in Christ, and he's the one that does the work, right? He's the one that raises up. But when you're living it out and you're dealing with the tension in the middle of it, it's difficult. It's easy to say and to understand, okay, we need to love God with everything and we need to love people. It's easy to say, it's easy to kind of grasp in our mind, but to walk it out, that's where it comes. And actually doing it, there's a difference.
Yeah, I'll take you to the slide.
This is my brain.
Uh-huh.
I was thinking a slide, like a PowerPoint slide.
Oh,
that sounds like fun.
Yeah.
Oh, this is the Rekha Park or something.
Yeah. Okay. We were just at the Bodies in Motion place. I just wanted to go check it out. Somebody was told us about it. And
yeah.
Well, it sounds like she loved it. Made an impression.
Yeah. She liked it.
Fun. Slides are fun.
That's cool. So you mentioned how what the BSC is now, it has kind of morphed and become what it is now.
Yeah.
And you say it's still in the process of becoming. Can you kind of
It's interesting.
Walk us through that history and projecting where it's going to go?
You know, I just had this conversation with my chairman, and this building was built by the Boise Church of Christ in 1973.
Yeah.
And there's a model that was called the Bible Chair model. They really wanted to provide theological education or Bible education for college students. And in a sense, you could say this was the college group of the Church of Christ. Well, in 1973, this was a junior college. It was really forward thinking of them. The prescience of mind they had to build this then.
Wow.
It was really amazing, I think, because there was not a lot of that going on. Francis Schaeffer in his Le Brie house in Switzerland, and then up in up in Regents in Vancouver, they were kind of seminal in this. I actually, somebody, I believe in the spirit of an age, because you could think of times when something was invented, and it was invented by different people, almost identical moments in time.
So yeah,
I don't know what that says about.
I hear you.
Something spirituality. I don't want to get all weird with you, but I do believe.
I hear you.
So I think these kinds of ideas, you can say, well, they got that from here. It's like, well, maybe they did get it from there, but maybe they both cropped up at the same
time. Exactly.
But in the 50s, 60s, Le Brie House, and then early 70s, this kind of idea was coming up around different campuses. And they really had a long ongoing, string of success with just what is a study center and what they're doing. The Biblical Studies Center was kind of built around that that model of having the Bible chair, which was a position that would just kind of head up the classes and set the curriculum. So for college students to be able to take classes and learn, and then have kind of a group of people that was really a community of college students.
Yeah.
So in about 2007, they kind of came to a point where they were trying to decide, a little bit of a crisis point. Okay, what are we going to do with the Biblical Studies Center, and where is it going to go from here?
Yeah.
And you know, long story short, they decided to open it up to be something more broadly evangelical. So other groups, so it wouldn't just be this expression of the Church of Christ anymore. Yeah. It would be something that was utilized and to reach all Christians.
That's
and to
really
provide
cool.
a place for students to learn about Christianity. So that John Moreland, who was the original director in 1973, he was getting set to retire, and he actually moved back here from New Mexico and jumped in back here at some time, I think it was 2007. And then he found out I was here ministering with a degree from Trinity in 2009. He said, you know, you're qualified to teach. And that was just this little extra breath of fresh air for me, kind of a side, you know, side hustle. I was teaching here, and when John stepped down, I kind of, actually somebody asked me, he said, you know, you should throw your hat in the ring and apply for that. And I just kind of get on my course and stay there. I'm actually not that entrepreneurial. I kind of, actually, I think Hannah, I think you're a real entrepreneur. Because you're a person of more action. I'll have an idea, and it just kind of stays there. It's like, huh, somebody should do this maybe. You know, she will just get an idea and, you know,
and then,
you know,
go,
train and resell horses and do all kinds of stuff. And it's fun. I feel like she's got a variety show just by existing. And I'm like, what happened over the weekend? And you never know.
Right.
Like, but I'm actually, I think I feign being an interesting person, but I'm actually pretty boring when it gets right down. It's like all I want is to be left alone and hang out at home. But yeah, when I kind of threw my hat in the ring, I thought, wow, should I consider doing this? And one of the coaches I was meeting with at Boise, with the football team, said, I think this is right in your wheelhouse, you know, something a little more academic, something like that. And so anyway, that I got hired in spring of 2013. And, you know, just my first board meeting ever was as the director of the center. And so I show up and I don't even know what's going on. You know, I don't know anything. It's like showing up the freshman, you know, and having never played high school sports. It's like, what is this? What are we supposed to do? So, I just kind of got acclimated, and there was, I'd say, some growing pains that anyone would recognize, and trying to learn who we are, and then honestly trying to agree on who we are and what we're supposed to be doing. But over time, I just think being persistent, gaining trust, you know, as a leader, it's going to take on my personality sooner or later. I'm going to be gone. And I'm, you know, even though I'm doing the job that I'm being asked to do, it's still going to be kind of, you know, this is how Bill does it. And over time, I would say I developed this, how I would communicate it, this concept of the three-legged stool.
And
where that comes from is, it was actually a clip from, The Princess Bride that came to mind. And I was
classics.
Thinking, well, I was thinking, what am I even supposed to do here? Like, let's do the Skunk Works thing. We just wipe the slate clean and say, what? Okay. Let's say here I've got the situation. How am I going to honor God? How are we going to help serve and advance the kingdom to his glory the best way possible? You know, there's maximize that, whatever metric that is,
exactly.
You know, the Geiger counter of, you know, God's will or something. And that there's that scene when they have to storm the castle to save the princess and he says, oh, we just don't have any assets. And he says, well, we've got a wizard's cloak and a wheelbarrow. It's like, why didn't you list that among our assets? And so I kind of thought, okay, here we're storming the castle. I mean, that's the gospel. It's kind of the North Star for us. And you know, evangelism, discipleship, growing his kingdom. And we have a building virtually on campus. And these accredited college Bible classes that we can offer that are accredited through Oklahoma Christian University.
Nice.
A really unique arrangement that I just think is amazing. It's been a tremendous blessing. And it's kind of like having a chip in the big game that we can offer that here.
Yeah.
So really a neat deal. And so I said, okay, we have that. What can we do now? And out of that came this concept of the three-legged stool, which is, okay, we have academics, which is the classes.
Exactly.
Also seminars, and even just being available to talk and answer questions, yeah. dialogue,
library.
The library, yeah, library. Yeah, doing apologetics and things like that. The academic, I'll call it just the life of the mind.
Yeah.
And my doctorate that I later got finished up in at Talbot was a program down there called Engaging Mind and Culture. It was really a philosophy of religion, more than even just apologetics, but there's a lot there. But, you know, the idea of worldview, understanding culture, and wanting to foster a life of the mind among Christians.
Yeah.
So it's not just all feelings based.
Exactly.
And obviously, we all know people that have gone too far one way or the other. Exactly. It's like, like Christian Mr. Spock. And it's like, he doesn't, you know, tell me about joy. Do you even know what that is?
Exactly.
You know? And other people, it's like kind of almost like they're going from one high to another and they can't, you know, it's like, let's try to string together a couple of, you know, scriptural bases for what you're going through.
Yeah.
And, but so this, the second leg of the stool is the hospitality, which, you know, here we are, we're a building.
Yeah, exactly.
And the kind of the flagship of that has been our Thursday lunches. It's a free lunch for any student and they come, and that's really grown into something that, I'm thrilled with. It's a really neat mix.
Cool. Yeah.
It's international students. It's people from every belief and tribe, you know. It's really interesting. And then there's also ministries that are different campus ministries, but it's kind of their space too.
Yeah, exactly.
And so that leads into the third leg of the stool, which is just the partnerships. I really believe in my heart that one day we'll be standing in heaven side by side, and we will, I don't know if you're allowed to feel sheepish in heaven, but we will I think feel sheepish that we didn't do a better job working together.
Yeah.
And there's this story I heard years and years ago about a little boy that got lost in a cornfield, and they went out trying to search for him, and they couldn't. And it was, you know, like two nights in a row, really cold temperature.
Yeah. Yeah.
And finally they got the whole town got together, and they finally grabbed hands and walked. And somebody finally encountered him.
Wow.
And they found him. He had died. And they said, why didn't we join hands earlier? Why didn't we do that to begin
with? Wow.
I'm convinced that that is one of the glaring, embarrassing aspects of the Christian faith. I mean, everyone, it is, and I'm all about having a brand and writing for it to an extent.
Yeah.
You know, I have a podcast, not anywhere near where yours is, you know, but it exists, you know, but it's like, okay, great. Have a podcast, but don't, you know, there's this weird competitiveness that supersedes the faith kind of. And it's like, no, the faith that we need to have is a faith of a cooperative spirit that we're really all in this together. So those are the three legs of the stool.
Yeah.
And honestly,
I love that.
I've tried to think of a better way of explaining it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, I always end up there. I say, you know, that's kind of good enough. That's where I'm at. And
yeah,
I don't know, Hannah, how you've experienced that coming in. I remember describing a little bit kind of the learning curve, but then
as far as working here and kind of
from not working here and kind of getting a feel for that, maybe before you knew the names of it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I definitely, I came here. It's funny. I came here for the academics.
Okay.
And I think I stayed because of really the hospitality. I would say that's what, which goes along with not just being a place, but being a place where there's people there that care about you and that want to get to know you.
Absolutely.
That is huge. And
you
that
can find plenty of open doors.
Oh, yeah.
Around the campus or around Boise, but to feel welcome, cared for.
Yes. Yeah. And that is huge. I felt that the minute I walked in here, and I've talked to so many students who've had the exact same experience. Mm. The contrast from Boise State's campus to the Biblical Study Center, it's just night and day. It really is. There's just a different, call it vibe or whatever. It's just a different feeling. Every joke
secretly,
about the vibe.
I believe it's the Holy Spirit. But
yeah, I was going to say, I'd imagine there's been prayers over that. There's probably been prayer that people would notice a difference when they step in here.
And it is.
That precise
Precisely.
Prayer. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. And it is. It's the presence of God that people sense in here.
Yeah.
And it's just so special. And I really did. The minute I walked in here, it's a place I wanted to be. Like, I just wanted to be here. And I live in Cuna, so it's not like, it's like a solid half hour drive. But I would come here, like, multiple days out of the week just to be here. You know, I could have gone to a coffee shop. I could have stayed home. I could have gone somewhere closer, but I wanted to be here. I wanted to, you know, be in this space. So cool. Yeah. And to talk to Bill and to just to get to know people and to be known and then just be in this place where we're so welcoming. It was so inviting. Just there's a peace here that is not really, as few places that I can name that have the same feel as here. And that's why it's so unique and special. But so that's kind of. Yeah, I've had a hard time explaining.
Really cool.
Yeah.
No, that is really cool. Fellow cavemen, and that's where we're at.
Yeah.
Cuna. That is awesome. And I think those three legs are, I can see that from what I've heard of the Biblical Studies Center, my couple of times just visiting here, like, I can see that.
That's cool.
I can see how that really characterizes the Biblical Studies Center.
Man, praise God.
Tell me, I want to dig into each one of these little stools a little bit.
Sure.
And kind of talk about those and what it looks like here. So first of all, academics. You said you guys have accredited classes for academics, and then that's something you offer to students over here at BSU.
Right.
Yeah. Right? And is it just students at BSU? Is it any students in the area? How does that work?
Yeah, it's really open to everyone. I try to prioritize students.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to think, in my 11 years here, I don't think I've ever had to ask someone not to attend a class.
Uh-huh.
So in a very theoretical sense, I'll say, just so you understand, we're prioritizing Boise State students.
Waiting
should
list.
A class,
they get
yeah,
the
that,
time.
You know,
yeah,
they'll,
absolutely.
But we haven't. You know, we're around, you know, we've had classes as low as that we've ended the semester with just two or three people.
Yeah.
And we've had other ones that have had, you know, 25, 30. And I'd say my average, honestly, let's see, we untying the knots usually has 15 or 16, I think it is. And I just kind of say, if we can have a dozen in a class, to me, that's a great size class.
We can
interact well.
Exactly.
And we have teachers that are really diving into the topic and understand it. And
that's
know
really
well.
Cool.
I've taught apologetics. I've taught ethics here. I've taught different Bible classes, you know, First Corinthians. I think I taught Hebrews. Somebody else has taught Hebrews.
Nice.
I co-taught, which I joke because it's like bringing in, you know, it's like, hey, I'm in a, you know, 2-on-2 basketball league, and my co-player is Michael Jordan.
Yeah. It's
like, but his name, Dorman Followill, we just had a chance/providential meeting and found out, and I had just started, I think, teaching Romans that semester. I said, you should hop in and team teach. Well, you know, one lecture from Dorman, I was like, you know, why don't you take next week too?
Yeah, exactly.
And the following week. How about I sub when you're out of town? I
mean, exactly. It was that good.
So he was able to teach Romans and then Psalms. I mean, we quote co-taught all these, but it was really Dorman's gig and just a tremendous blessing. I've seen these kinds of things happen. So
that's
anyway,
really cool.
we open it up, and so a student can get credit for it. They're actually building a transcript at Oklahoma Christian University.
Yeah.
And they have been able to transfer those into Boise State. Since Boise State doesn't have a religion or a Bible department, they're all just general electives for them.
Okay.
And so it's, you know, for some students, it's worked out really well. They've covered some bases
get
there.
Get their general electives.
Others,
knocked out.
I'll never forget talking to one student after tabling, going on campus and setting up a table and kind of advertising on the way back. This is Danny Brown. She's Danny Borman now, but, I said, Danny, okay, level with me. What's it going to take to fill up these classes with Boise State students? And she said, and she had taken apologetics with me, and which was kind of the one she just said, that one class is the one I want.
Mm-hmm.
Great. She said, you know, Bill, it's hard because honestly, to take a full-time student and to offer an extracurricular activity for them, that's a class. You know, it's like, that's a hard sell. And so I get that. So it tends, some people tend to, you know, they'll pick and choose. Maybe they'll take one or two.
Yeah,
but still, that's one or two classes.
Absolutely.
Others, it'll kind of end up being like, the ones that really go through, and if they take six classes, 18 credit hours, they'll get a certificate of biblical studies here.
Okay.
Which is like getting a college minor.
Okay. Yeah.
If for them to do that, it kind of ends up, they sort of, this is sort of their stomping grounds. A little bit. This is their hobby. This is their what they're involved in.
Exactly.
This is kind of where they're plugged in, other than being super involved in one of the other ministries. But for the most part, I want everything we do to be complementary to one of the other ministries. Exactly. I want as many students as can go on some of their summer projects and ministry trips and mission trips as possible. We will support them in that. We help them print their fundraising materials here. Nice. We really want to be a resource for them. And I want someone who comes and takes a class here to go back and be a good Bible study leader and put the principles into practice that they've learned either about Bible study methods and, you know, hermeneutics or simply the good arguments about evangelism, discipleship and apologetics. So any of that stuff that if I can help someone in another ministry that's sort of their home ministry.
Yeah.
If I help them become a better discipler or a Bible study leader or a more faithful follower of Christ, I check the success box over here at the BSC.
Yeah.
And there's part of that that is deliberate, and I kind of preach that. Poor Hannah's heard all my it's like, who should I preach to? Oh, Hannah, you're right there. She's heard it all many, many times. But really, I live and breathe this stuff. This, to me, is, I believe, the difference maker in the kingdom of God. You asked about other people. Yeah, it's open to community members.
Yeah.
A lot of our, honestly, the people that do end up consistently and faithfully taking classes are community members, which we love. If somebody wants to learn the word more deeply, again, great, that's a success point, victory point for us, for the kingdom.
Yeah.
And you talk about, it's a way of really equipping people who are involved in other ministries and ministry leaders, which I feel like ties right into what you guys mentioned with partnerships.
Yeah.
And that being one of the tools.
And Christian teachers at Christian high schools who have used this for their continuing education credits. I mean, that's like, yes, perfect fit. Let's do that. So I love that.
Yeah.
And I love being able to offer it. And it's who we are.
Yeah,
really, that's kind of an identifying mark of who we are at the Biblical Studies Center. But also the hospitality side, there's something about it. You know, when students come to college and, you know, when you left home at 17, you said, we are ready. And it's not even just, oh, I'm being rebellious. I think there's something that has to take place. It's almost the metamorphosis of a worm to a caterpillar or a caterpillar to a butterfly or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
You're going through a process of transformation, and you have to be able to make decisions that you know you are making for yourself and by your own volition.
Yeah.
And people come here, and if they've grown up in a Christian home, they know the right answers that they're supposed to say.
Yeah.
They know what grandma wants to hear them say when I ask them, you know, how would you describe your relationship with God right now? It's like, you can almost feel grandma standing behind them, like leaning in, you know? And so what I try to do here is create a space where students know that they're free to either express difficult questions, unpopular things. And frankly, however, I don't think people intentionally do this, but I think it's kind of just natural human nature that we stifle difficult questions in church.
Yeah.
And I think some of it is people, you know, Sunday school teachers or whomever, they don't feel equipped.
Yeah.
And sometimes I think there's a little bit of a controlling, you know, use of shame or manipulation, all those blend together. For whatever reason, so many people said there's questions that they never felt they were free to ask. And, you know, diagnose that. I don't understand why, but it's a real condition.
No, absolutely.
And it happens. And I'm not even trying to, I'm not trying to explain why, just that.
Yeah. And I feel like that is something that is more common within a church setting, a Sunday school setting, whatever it may be, a discipleship class setting, rather than an academic setting.
Yeah. Well, and when you're at this age and this academic setting, it's when you can roll this out.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very interesting. And that's one of the primary things I'm trying to accomplish in a classroom when I'm teaching. And you'll notice the first couple of weeks, you set the tone a little bit. And you've been in classes and where the sharing that takes place at the end of the class, the end of the semester, is completely different. It's like you've got a group of close friends that you've built trust.
Yeah,
and it's
exactly.
Like, this is the kind of vulnerability. It's okay not to know something. It's okay to be wrestling with a tough question. It's okay to be struggling with your faith and doubt and all of that.
Exactly.
But what's interesting is when those things are put out in the open, it strengthens your faith to be able to have dealt with it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Would you say that, because I look at you, Hannah, and you are someone, I don't see that what I would consider natural progression in you, and maybe because I think you came out of high school being pretty solid in a lot of ways, but I don't know how you would describe your journey that way here. Was there any of that? Was there?
Yeah, I think so. Like definitely in high school and just growing up, my parents were really wanted to make sure we as kids knew the reason why we believe what we did and not just because they said so, you know, but actually getting into, okay, what are the whys? And let's go into some apologetics and defending your faith and stuff. So I definitely had that foundation. And then it's just been built upon here, you know, where we're in Bill's class and we're just talking about things that we're talking about the resurrection and evidence for the Bible and all that. And I think it's so valuable, I think, for two reasons. One, it's encouraging to my faith, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
You do have these questions and you wonder and you're like, man, if I say this out loud, am I all of a sudden like not a Christian or something?
Uh-huh.
Am I betraying God or something? But you also are kind of, if you're not careful, those doubts can kind of morph into something big. It really affects the way you live your life and you live out your faith. And so it's so encouraging to me to be able to ask those questions and get them answered and have an answer for my own self.
Yeah.
And then the second part of it is having an answer for the world. You know, and for those who I come in contact with who are asking these same questions, and I want to be able to give a reason for the hope that I have. And so between those two things, man, if those both can work together, you know, me having an answer in my own heart and then being able to translate that into a conversation with a student or a coworker or a friend, well, that is transformative, I think. Yeah. And that it changed your life because it's like, man, I can have the head knowledge and the heart.
Yeah.
But I think a lot of times it starts in the head. You have to know that these things are actually true.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can trust it and you can let it trickle down to your heart and then actually affect your life. And so, yeah, it's huge. And I think Bill and just the BSC in general that's what we try to do here. Yeah. You know,
so I'll put you on the spot here, Hannah.
Yeah.
You mentioned in William Lane Craig's book, On Guard, he gives three reasons for doing apologetics. You mentioned two of them, strengthening believers and reaching unbelievers. Mm-hmm. Do you remember the third?
just a second.
Hannah's pretty good at this.
Yeah.
When you say it, you're going to go, yeah. Oh, right, right. I was going to say. So it's
3 o'clock, Bill. Brain stopped working.
So it's shaping culture.
Oh, shaping culture.
Okay.
Yeah. Of course.
So shaping culture is just this notion that these are questions that are talked about in the public forum. And it's amazing how many of the questions that are the real questions can't be raised.
Yeah.
No one talks about that.
Yeah.
We'll talk about all this other stuff, but we won't talk about that. So, how about...
It's going to be talked about somewhere.
Yeah. How about...
Are we going to be part of the conversation?
Yeah. How about let's shape culture by continuing to put out there that, actually, there's... very strong evidence. In fact, I would say the best conclusion or the inference to the best explanation when you're looking at the evidence for the resurrection is that Jesus rose from the dead as testified in scripture.
Exactly.
And that's not irrational or irrational. It's not just a quote leap of faith that some people say. Now, there's always going to be a sense of risk involved to commit yourself to something, but that's all of life.
Yeah.
And to not really do that in any way is to drift downstream. And when I say that, we really do drift downstream.
Absolutely.
Romans 12, 1 and 2. Do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. There's a deliberate stance and even a meditative focus that you have to take to resist drifting downstream and being like the culture. So if we want to shape culture, we need to be in his word. We need to understand apologetics and we need to speak it out. And again, we all know there are ways to be obnoxious and ways to not be obnoxious. you don't have to be obnoxious. Yeah.
Absolutely.
I think you measure when and where. There's always the timing of things.
Yeah.
In fact, I think if I've learned anything in ministry in all these years, 30 years, it has to do with a timing of, I'll just call it patient timing, where you learn some answers and you're chomping at the bit, like you're waiting.
Yeah,
you know, it's like you got your new pocket knife and
like, want to cut something. You
know? I want to use a Phillips. Where can I? It's like, what is it on here? And it's like you learn these answers, and you want to put them into practice. It's like, yes, in the right time. And a lot of times, because a lot of times we're answering questions that people don't have there. There's something deeper.
Yeah.
Which you mentioned, the head to the heart. I think it goes back and forth and back.
I think you're right.
Absolutely.
And I think
I think some people start at the heart.
Yes.
Some people start at the head.
Yeah.
But it has to get to both.
It does.
Absolutely has to get to both.
We mentioned it earlier, but we all know people, and it's easier to identify than other people because we don't know. But there's people who are just so hyper rational. It's like, you know what? You're going to win every argument with your wife, and in so doing, you're going to lose your marriage.
Yeah.
You know, let's talk about the heart side of things.
Exactly.
And what it means to listen. Listening takes patience.
Absolutely.
But I also think it's one of the most loving things we can do. If we're going to love our neighbor, listen to him.
Yeah.
Thank you for joining us for the In Hope podcast. Please subscribe and share to make sure we can keep getting out more content like this. The In Hope podcast is a small part of the ministry of In Hope, which is dedicated to help strengthening the unity of the body of Christ. You can support us in this by visiting inhope.tv to donate and following us on Instagram. Thank you, and we hope to see you on Instagram and back next week for another episode of the In Hope podcast.